I'm Dr. Rod Berger. Sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and explore some of today's most pressing educational issues through the experienced eyes of leading education personalities. Welcome to Coffeed. Well, Bill, it is so nice to be able to sit down with you today. And I, you know, look, last night we had, you know, another debate. The presidential election is in full force, and we're starting to see more discussion around education. And I think that that can only benefit the masses, that we're at least going to start to see some conversation. Some say it's a little too late to start now, but at least it's getting out into the public. I know, obviously, dropout concerns are big in your history and the work that you've done, and we hope that we see more solutions around that. But I want to take you back to 1960. Talk with me about street academies and what was going on then, and are there any similarities now, sadly, in 2016 as to what you saw at the beginning of street academies in 1960?
Well, the context, Rod, was that, you know, I had in the 60s about 35 young people living with me that were either getting off drugs or didn't have any place to stay in that. And it just became very clear the ones that started to make it, you know, were just so far behind in school, the only alternative to was to sell drugs, and they'd already been busted out of school or what have you. So we just started a storefront school, and back then the GED was so valuable that we would just get very smart Columbia or New York University students or anybody that would help. I said, I know how to turn them on to living, you turn them on to learning. So it was out of that experience we ended up with 18 of those schools back then, and in the early 70s I was asked to speak before a group here in Washington about why so many of those young people made it. So that's kind of how I got. I'm not an educator. I backed into it because we cared a lot about the kids and wanted to give them hope in the future, and we knew they had to have educational tools in order to do that.
Bill, do you see similarities to today's challenges with regards to trying to reduce the dropout rate nationally?
Well, you know, the issue is that I think when I spoke here after that 60s experience, I said that I thought education was going to be the main issue of our time, the biggest moral, ethical, and economic issue, and that we were going to win or lose the future at the schoolhouse door, but that we weren't going to solve the problem if we looked at it as simply an education issue. I said then that it was a breakdown of community issue, and that schools were going to be asked to be mother, father, sister, brother, social worker, hall guard. And it's taken all these years to get people to understand we have to deal with it in a holistic way, that not all kids go to school equally, and that's still true. And it's there's a bigger gap between have and have-nots as ever, and kids going to school with a whole lot of baggage that the other kids don't always have to go to school with. And unless you deal with those external issues, it's hard to create a learning environment. Bill, that makes sense.
Absolutely. What's interesting in what you said was you were talking earlier about the GED back in the 60s and the value of that. Are we seeing that been watered down, and is this chasm that you speak of so great that when we're working with children to keep them from dropping out or to really recover them in an academic setting, does this now change the plan for sort of that next step because the GED is either devalued or is it devalued at this point in time?
Well, I mean, so much has changed since back then that, you know, we have such a gap for the kind of pedagogy that young people need today compared to back then, as far as to even get into the having a marketable skill. And so even the high school diploma, as we know, you have to do something beyond that in order to be prepared for the jobs that are there for the 21st century.
And I know that mentoring is really important for what you do at communities and schools. Talk with me a little bit about the role mentoring plays in your, from your perspective, in assisting a young person who is trying to obviously take the right path and one that's going to be much more successful for them in the long run.
Well, it starts with that. I mentioned earlier, as we were talking, mentioned earlier that a kid needs to get turned on to living before they get turned on to learning. And I personally got turned on because somebody mentored me and cared enough about me. I found out that the young people are changed through relationships, not programs, and that once some young person has somebody that's mentoring them that really believes in them and gives them hope, then you have them on the track to learning, because they, hope is one of the greatest forces to get young people to learn.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and it makes me think if we sort of shift over to those that are providing the services, the educators, the support resources in a school community. I just wonder, what your thoughts are as to how we can alter the narrative. It seems that we have a lot of distractors out there, or items that we're focusing on, and it becomes very distracting then to look at what really is mattering. And to your point, it's the relationships and understanding how these kids are not only in school surviving, but also outside of school. When we have all of these arguments, these petty arguments around data and funding, and see these other pieces that may not really matter. They do matter, but just at a different level.
Well, I think you have to bring it home to people that how did your kids make it? For those who did, they made it because they had a caring adult in their life that had an irrational commitment to them making it, that love was the beginning point, and that the most powerful thing. But then they need a safe place to learn. And What kind of environment do you want your kids learning in that's safe, and where people know that various young people learn different ways, and creating environments where we really hear the kids and the way they learn. They need to know they have hope through having a skill that's going to get them either a real job or one they can create. They need to be part of the change and give them a chance to give back. My message to so many people that look at this, just what did you want for your child? And if they made it, what was it that had them make it? And I think it's these basics. And so justice says that it's not just us, it's all of us. All children need and deserve to have that. And all kids can learn. And you can't say the conditions they live in are excuse, but they are a factor. If one kid's going to school with 10 times as many vocabulary words as the other kid entering school, you've already started with the younger person that doesn't have has weights on their hands. If some kid's going to school that has had a rough family situation, doesn't have any leadership there, and other kids are coming from a home that has the resources, that's a justice issue. And if kids are coming to school without their teeth fixed or without glasses, or if they've seen their father or something taken off to jail, or they're coming to school with all these issues, and then we're asking teachers to
solve those problems.
Deal with all those issues. Yeah.
I would be curious, with the legacy that you've obviously built and very well known around the country. Obviously you've worked under three presidents. You've seen so many different things. How have you, just personally, dealt with, I'll say this for myself, the challenge that you want to be so many things to so many people when it comes to helping kids, and whether it's resources or just, putting a kind note to a child, there's so many things that we can do. How have you handled the request over the years to be so many things to so many people 24/7 in a way that is manageable for you, and that you can be then productive both as a person and as a professional?
Well, one of the things that I saw, and I think we need a whole army of people who are what I call relational routers, in communities and schools. That's our site coordinator. If kids have multiple needs and have all these different resource needs, the problem is the resources are scattered all over town and they need a PhD in systems to get that help. If they have somebody there that knows how to do relational triage, where, you know, which kids just need that one-to-one relationship with a caring adult, and another person, you know, has a drug issue or gang banging or what have you, you're able to bring a different kind of case management way of dealing with them. You have to have somebody, I believe, in every school who's freed up to be that person that's reaching out to the community. You can't do all these things yourself, but there's all these pieces of the orchestra out there, but they're all played at different parts of town, and you become a conductor. You're able to multiply what you're doing and meet whatever the needs of that young person is, rather than you trying to do it yourself. Yeah, does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I just have an image of an orchestra as we're sitting here. You know, I want to go back to the component there about the orchestra and being the conductor. You know, one of the things that I think that we struggle with just as communities around the U.S. when we think about public education is civic responsibility when it comes to providing for students in an educational setting. You know, we're becoming privatized in so many ways, yet, all day long and every day during the school year, we're sending our kids off to public institutions, and we struggle with how do we then resource these varied, components in our community so that, one, we help a taxed education system that has, you know, so many demands growing on them on a day-to-day basis, and do so in an economical fashion. How do you look at the balance between public and private with regards to how we can provide better resources to schools in support of students?
Well, I think the big issue, and I said this in a conversation years and years ago with Cisco Systems, when they said, well, what you're doing at community schools, what makes you different? And I said, it's our router. And they said, we have the router. I said, yeah, you're going to change how we collect, organize, and disseminate information. We need to change our whole delivery system, both public and private, because the resources are all in silos all over town. We need to integrate these systems and have them organized around the school so that you build a sense of community so that some of those needs may be, you know, a private, you know, Boys and Girls Club. So, hey, we need to have your Boys and Girls Club over here person. Another might be something that deals with health issues that's government related. Well, so you blend them together, but if you keep the metaphor that you just talked about, the orchestra, the guy years ago that helped me get started in this, Quincy Jones is quite a neat person in the music world, as we know. He said, I don't understand why people don't understand what you're talking about. You're saying that the violins are in one part of town, the drums are in another, and the bass in another. And they're all playing their own music, and there's no conductor to pull them together. I think you do a blending of all these various resources when you integrate them and bring them together in one spot. And the school, I think, has over the years fallen into the vacuum that was created by a lot of breakdown in community, and it's asking to be that community. So let's bring the village to them.
Why do you think that is, that we've just been notorious in public education in thinking that a couple of things? One, everything should be free and that they should not interact with the private sector, when in truth, to run a school, every day they're engaging with the private sector to be able to supply resources, products, solutions, you know, on the backside, or what you might not see in front of the curtain, but behind the curtain, these schools wouldn't survive. Yet, for whatever reason, there's a narrative that the blending that you speak of is, you know, that we just cannot, it's a faux pas to do so.
Well, like you said it very, you know, very clearly, we have products in front of our eyes 24 hours a day. We have, I think that they're already exposed to all these, and where are they going to get their employment in the future? You have to have a pipeline into a lot of these very industries to be employed, to be part of the workforce. So if you keep those worlds apart, then there's no knowledge on how to ever. A lot of our kids that we've worked with around the country have never been inside a corporation, never been inside a studio, never. A lot of them just miles from the water, never been to the water. They don't know what the opportunities are. And if you, we just take for granted, everybody knows, you know, what it was. I took years ago out in L.A. work, you know, we built a relationship with Univision. They needed to have young people know that what their world's like. These young people had never been in a building. They didn't know that someday they could be behind a camera. They didn't, unless they were exposed to it and had a vision that, hey, someday I may be able to be behind that camera or write the next great show or what have you. So you can't separate these things.
Yeah, that it's just, it's the world that we live in, and that it actually brings in reality. And I couldn't help but think, when you're talking about the students, that it's also on the school model side of it, is that if we don't incorporate the private sector and the innovation that is out there and the expertise, how are schools going to know that there are resources out there to help what they're trying to do? So it's so funny how when we substitute in school or student, that they really are struggling from some of the same issues.
Exactly.
Well, Bill, I've got to tell you, this is a fantastic treat to be able to sit down and have a cup of coffee and tea in your case today. with your history in working with young people and communities is just extraordinary, and it was just a real treat to be able to spend this time with you.
Well, I hope we get to have coffee together again.
Thanks, Bill. Join us for our next cup of coffee as we continue to have conversations in education that matter to you. I'm Dr. Rod Berger, and this is Coffeed.